Turn our attention again to Ephesians 5. We have to realize and understand that as Christians, what Paul is talking about here, we by ourselves can never attain. That we do attain it through him, but that's why it's so important that we have one another to help us on the path. To help us on through the journey of the Christian life. We can't do it alone. Many people think that they can. It's just like what Erling was bringing up about her brother. Many people think that they have to do it on their own. Without help. But that's what the church is for. We're here to help one another. To help one another live the Christian life. Now, sometimes that's not the easiest thing. And sometimes we do have to, for lack of better words, confront one another. Not all the time, but sometimes that's necessary. But in doing all of that, within that, we are to do it in such a way that we build one another up. That we encourage one another to continue to live the Christian life. We look around us in our world today, and it's been that way for years and years, but it's not easy. If anybody tells you that living the Christian life and being a Christian is easy, they haven't read the word. Because it's not. And it's not easy. For us to accomplish what Paul is saying here. But in all of that, and that's why we're going to sing in the closing song, Bind Us Together. In all of that, the church, do we realize that as the church, that we are surrounded by love? We're not only surrounded by the love of one another, of each other. But we are surrounded by Christ's love. By the love of God. What Paul says here, Paul tells us that the Lord, that Jesus, he cherishes the church. He cherishes the church. Not this building. This building could be burnt down tomorrow. Some of us might desire that. You know. And then what would we do? Say if this building was burnt down tomorrow, what would we do? What's that, Jeb? Would we just quit meeting together? What, Patty?
Depends how many of us were in the building when it went off.
Yeah.
If we were all in it, then yes.
Yeah. But you think he cherishes, and that's what I have a hard time with. And some people say, well, preacher, you're just envious of them. No, I'm not. But the one I have a hard time with so many of our churches today building these mega things and these huge campuses and that. And many of them think that, you know, they're building it to the honor and glory of God. And all the things that they put in it and all that. And they say, you know, and we can't really discount that, can we? Let me say they're building it to the honor and glory of God. But again, and they want to say that, well, yeah, we have to, you know, we have to build those things and do those things because it does. We want something like Solomon's temple, you know, or Herod's temple. We want something that really will show forth the fact that we give honor and we give glory to God. And the more magnificent it is, the more we show that. But sometimes I wonder, are they looking at it from the wrong angle? Because does the Lord cherish the building? What did he say to the children of Israel when they had their magnificent temple? And what they did within that, though, that was desiring to God. Didn't the Lord say, I hate your sacrifices. Don't bring me those things. And why did he say that to them? Because their heart was not right with him. What's that, Jeff? Oh, brothers and sisters, if you read in the Old Testament, really, and studied that out, like we were studying, Erling can tell you, as we were studying the book of Ezekiel, some of the things that the children of Israel did in Judah before Judah was captured by the Babylonians. It's interesting to me, and I'm not saying, and I say that, I'm not saying that it's dirty, because it's not. God is the one that gave us sex, you know, and all the ramifications and stuff that go with that. So it's a good thing, but it can be disabused, right? It can be perverted. And it's interesting when you look at through all the idolatry and the things that the children of Israel did in there, how a lot of it revolved around that, the sexual matters. And in the Old Testament, before the Babylonian captivity, in God's temple, in the temple, and near the Holy of Holies, the Jews placed things that were an abomination to him. Some of them, they had their own little different idols, and they had separate rooms, and on those they had these pictorial things, pictures, pictorial things of their idols, and the abominations that they did. And instead of worshiping God, they worship these idols. And it says the last of them, that the Holy of Holies is here, and the religious leaders The main religious leaders were facing this way. And they were facing towards, or I should say, that you say the Holy of Holies is here. And the religious leaders, instead of facing the Holy of Holies, were facing this way, or it would be that way. That's the east, I think. Facing that way, instead of toward the Holy of Holies, they were facing towards the sun. Because, you know, why? They were worshiping the sun. They did, and doing all those things. And God shows Ezekiel in the vision, and he shows him, he says, the Shekinah, my glory. The Shekinah, he showed him the Shekinah glory leaving the temple. And at that time, God's glory left, and the rest of the Jews were taken into captivity. And yes, years later, they were brought back. And then when Jesus comes in the temple, when Jesus comes, the temple, what does he see that's going around? This Herod's temple now, but still the temple where the Jews worship God. And in the outer court, which was known as the court of the Gentiles, what did Jesus see there? That's supposed to be a place where the Gentiles, the Goyim, those who weren't Jews, see, they had the main place where the Jews could go. Of course, they had the Holy of Holies where the high priest would go, and then they had the place where the Jews could go and present their sacrifices and that. Then they had the court of women where the women could go. See, the men didn't go where the women didn't go where the men went. They had the court of women, and then they had the court of Gentiles. That was on the outer side, on the outside. And Jesus comes along twice, not once, but twice, the beginning of his ministry and the end of his ministry. And what does he find there at the court of the Gentiles? What are they doing? They set up their things so that they could sell the things for sacrifices. The place where the Gentiles were supposed to be able to worship. They couldn't worship there. Why? Huh? Yes. And Jesus says, the last time, he takes and he braids a whip. I think Jesus was meek and mild when he did that. Guys, you know, this isn't right. You shouldn't be doing this. Could you all please just leave? I don't think Jesus did that. He said, you have made my Father's house a den of thieves. And he drove them out. He overturned the tables. When you look at Jesus, I can't imagine. He wasn't meek and weak when he did that. He's a carpenter's son, remember? I think Jesus was a strong man. And when he did that, he showed forth his righteous anger. And he drove them out. Beginning of his ministry, 3.5 years later, what are they still doing? They're still doing it. So he drives them out again for the last time. And then remember what he says to the women as he's being led to crucifixion? He said, weep not for me. Weep for yourselves. Remember Jesus said, oh, just like a mother hen, I would like to take you under my wing. He's telling his people. Because first he said, I came first for the house of Israel. They rejected him. And that's why as he was going to crucifixion, the women are weeping and they're crying and that. And Jesus said, weep not for me. Weep for yourselves. Because Jesus knew what was about to happen years later, didn't he? When he died, and that's why I firmly believe and will continue to teach and to preach and tell people there will be no temple built in Jerusalem. No physical temple. Because God will not allow it. God does not want it. When Jesus died, that veil between the Holy of Holies was rent in two. And you read the scriptures and you see how thick that thing was. And there are people who will say, oh, you know, that just happened by an earthquake. That was just a natural thing. Mm-hmm. You read the descriptions of that curtain in the Holy of Holies. That was a thick thing. It was only God that could rend. And he rent that thing in two between the Holy of Holies. And what was he saying? The same thing that he told the children of Israel. When instead of showing their love towards him, they worshiped the idols. And instead of taking care of one another, they disabused one another. Remember what Jesus told the Pharisees. He said, you tithe, your dill, your mint, and your cumin. You do all of that. And Jesus said, he wasn't saying that's wrong, don't do that. But he said, you have forgotten the weightier matters. And the weightier matters were what? Justice and mercy. And the Pharisees forgot that. So when that temple veil was rent in two when Jesus died, God was saying, okay, people, I've had enough. You reject my son. Talking about a temple? I don't need temples. Isn't that what the scriptures say? He inhabits the praises of his people. He inhabits the people. Not the buildings. Us. And we are surrounded by his love. Jesus cherishes and nourishes us, brothers and sisters. He cherishes and nourishes the church. That's what Erling's brother needs to find. It's that love. And come to know that. And to accept that. That's what people out here in this world, that's what they need. Because what is missing within them, we call it in counseling, we call it the hole in the soul syndrome. So many people out there in the world, they have that. They have the hole in the soul. I could tell you and read you numbers of people who have all kinds of money, who had all kinds of money. David Cassidy, when he died, you know what his last four words were? They recorded it. Well, his daughter said, listed what her father said. David Cassidy's last words were this: so much wasted time. He spent his life making music, writing songs. And then his four last words were, so much wasted time. I can tell you about others who had all kinds of money. I'm reading a book right now by one of the British rock stars of early days. And his thing is this. He says at the end of his book, he says, I haven't found home yet. He said, it's something still missing. Oh, he has a home, but he says, I haven't found home. You know why he hasn't found home? Because he still has that hole in the soul. See? And what the Jewish people, the religious leaders, they did not realize who was in their midst. And when God rent that veil, that temple, in the temple, he was saying, I've had it. You think going by in this temple, in the Holy of Holies, you're worshiping me. And God's saying, I sent you my son. You rejected him. And that's why Jesus said what he did, because he knew in 70 AD what would happen. The Romans came in, and what did they do? They obliterated Jerusalem. They obliterated the temple. All that's left of the temple and what the Jews go to even today is one part of a wall, and it's not even a wall of the temple, but it's the Wailing Wall, they call it. The Western Wailing Wall. And they go there and they pray in that. Why? Because they want the temple again. That's what many Christians say, that they want the temple again. But God is saying, no more temple. I give you my son. I spoke to you through the prophets. I spoke to you through the fathers, through the patriarch, through the prophet. Now last I've spoken to you through my son. So what do you do to my son? You rejected him. And you want another temple? You see, it's what Paul is saying here. Christ loved the church so much. And many people seem to think that he has abandoned his church. And how wrong they are. He's not abandoned us. Has abandoned us. He hasn't abandoned the church. He cherishes and he nourishes the church. Look at verse 30. Because we are members of his body. That's the reason why Christ does. That's why he gave us this. Now, excuse me, many times we have heard it over the years that the church is surrounded. That we are surrounded. That the church is surrounded, we are surrounded by an evil and hostile world. That false? No. But many people think it's like the church is like a besieged fortress. But we need to remember, brothers and sisters, that the church is surrounded by Christ's love. Yes, there's that evil and hostile world out there. And I'll tell you something else. There always will be until we leave this earth, until he comes again. There will always be that antagonism and evil and hostility. But in within all of that, we are surrounded by his love. By his care. And that is, we have to see this as well, that we are surrounded by his love and his care, both individually and corporately, as a church. We are blanketed. We are covered over by God's love. Just as this earth is covered over by an atmosphere that keeps us here. So the church, we are blanketed by his love. God gave us his son. Jesus is building his church. He loves it. That's what Paul says, and he will never forsake her. And the fact that Paul says that Christ died for the church, that shows he loves, cherishes, and nourishes the church. Brothers and sisters, the greatest privilege we have on this earth, our greatest privilege is to have been added to his church, is to be part of his church. His greatest love. Now, the question we must ask ourselves is this. And we need to ask ourselves this every day. If his greatest love is the church, and Paul tells us that it is, what is our greatest love? What is our greatest love? Is it the love of the world? Is it the love of self? That's why many people have a hard time coming to the Lord, because they think they have to give up self. What is our greatest love? Is it that? Or is it Jesus Christ and his Father? Our one and only God. Oswald Chambers said many years ago, in his book, My Utmost for His Highest, God gives us discernment not so that we might criticize, but rather so that we may intercede. The church, brothers and sisters, it is the church that intercedes for the world. It is we as the church that intercede for one another. And above all, it is Christ, what John tells us in 1 John, that Christ intercedes for us, doesn't he? Now, if that is the case, and all that is true, do you think, is the Lord going to abandon us? I don't think so. We can abandon him, though. Can we not? And that's the thing that we have to wrestle with each and every day. But oh, how we need to come to the fact and learn that Jesus surrounds us. He cherishes us. He nourishes us. He surrounds us with his love. Bind us together, Lord. Yes. Bind us together with what? With cords that can't be broken. But what are those cords? It's his love. Jesus said, a new commandment I give to you. What is that? What was that? You love one another just as I have loved you. And how did he love us? He gave his life. So we in the church, to show that love, kind of love, to one another. Just as he loves and cherishes the church, so we love and cherish him, and so we love and we cherish one another. That's what it's all about. That's why he says, no longer, not with temples made with wood and other things, with temples made with hands, but his spirit resides within us, does it not? That's where it's at. Not in the temple, not in the physical temple, and it never will be. I do not believe that. Now, some people might think I'm wrong and say, preacher, that can never be right, and that's not going to happen. But I believe that God's not going to allow another temple to be built. Because he said, I sent my son. My son's the answer. My son is enthroned with me now. You think I want another temple? I've given you my son. And he's forever enthroned there. And that's where we're going to be enthroned one day. That's what we look forward to. So think of that as we stand. We're going to sing, Bind Us Together.